I never felt like I was the most talented GM, so I figured I gotta work. Like, I gotta be prepared and I gotta outwork people, and that's kind of the philosophy that I had.
Tom Telesco had nothing to do with that decision.
Just a lot of emotions that go into when you're a fan of a team and it moves. My job, yeah, there's always anxiety because you're responsible for a lot of people. Anxiety's real. I think everybody handles it differently, though. Some people handle it just by getting out and doing something different and being around people that you enjoy being around.
Tom Telesco, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And Eddie Booz, and just I always like to plug that intro song. Eddie.
I appreciate you, brother. Yep. From my latest album, Through Rose Colored Glasses. Yeah. Free to download on my website. Thank you. I appreciate that, brother.
I
appreciate
think it's great.
That,
yeah.
Man.
It's pretty soothing.
It
Thank
is.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
And it's original, huh?
Yep. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's good. Well, Tom Telesco, former GM of the San Diego Chargers, former GM of the Las Vegas Raiders. What are you doing here, Tom? Why'd you want to be on the show? Why'd you call me and say, hey, can I be on your show?
Yeah, all right. Well, I got some time on my hands now. I got to fill my days up a little bit. So, yeah, obviously our kids played football together, I think since, what, 7th or 8th grade?
Yeah, and their
and then,
buddies.
And then through high school.
Yeah.
I saw your brother at Mountain Mike's.
Okay.
Picking up a pizza. He's like, hey, you know, Ryan's got a podcast. So I'm like, hey, if never needs a guest, you let me know.
Oh, let's go.
Here we go.
Well, I remember when you moved into town, everybody wanted a piece of you. And I was thinking, man, if I could only just get his cell number, I could probably get into the owner's booth at the Chargers games. But I didn't get your cell number until after you were let go by the Raiders. So. Well, anyway, so that's my next question. Are you going to get another job and maybe get me into the owner's booth someday?
Well, that's a two-part question. So first, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do moving forward. I'm kind of taking some time right now to just see what's out there. You know, worked in the NFL for 30 years, the GM for 12. So it's been nice to kind of take a step back and kind of decompress for a little bit. You know, it's been a grind for actually the last 12 years. It's been a grind. So, I mean, I love it, but I just kind of want to see what else is out there. I mean, I've been to football my entire life, you know, played high school football, played college football, and then worked in the NFL for 30 years. So for 38 years, I've been on a football team somewhere. So it's a little bit of a shock right now that I'm not, which is why I'm volunteering at CDM. With their team in this
very
this fall,
cool.
Just to kind of, I got to get back on the field somewhere, but I'm going to do some different projects and kind of see what pops up next year. Will I go back to the NFL? Possibly. I don't know. Would it be as a GM? Probably not. I think those days are probably over, but maybe some other role where I can help somebody out and we'll kind of see and go from there. As far as you in the owner's booth, I've seen you at games. I think you'd have more fun in the stand than the owner's booth.
I'll take that as an insult, Tom. Thank you.
Right. I had a quick question for you. So with the downtime, if you could snap your fingers right now and do anything, even if it's just take some time off for a year and then do something, what would that thing be like? And that may materialize differently in a year, mm-hmm. but right now, if you could do anything, what would it be?
Great question. Probably a couple things, and I'm probably do some of them this year. Look, I guess I've been to football my whole life.
Yeah.
I have all this knowledge in my head that
sure.
What am I going to do with now? So I do like, you know, kind of educating fans, educating the public on what's going on, especially as a GM. Like, why do teams make certain decisions? What went into it? Some context, some background. Because I've was part of it for a long time, so maybe some media type stuff, and then I really love advising young kids, whether high school or college, that want to go work in sports. It doesn't have to be football, but it could be any job in sports, and try and help them, kind of navigate that, because the supply of jobs in sports is small, but the demand is just really high. Mm. Everybody wants to work in sports. But there's some different ways you can kind of, work your way in. Like I said, it doesn't have to be as a GM. It could be like all these sports teams, they're businesses. They have all sorts of jobs. They've got social media jobs on with all these teams and everything from not only scouting and player development and coaching, but then you've got athletic training, you've got doctors, you've got equipment people, you got video, you got public relations, and then you got, ticketing and business, all these different departments. So, but to kind of advise some people, if you want to work in sports, these are some things you can do. I love doing that with kids.
So what comes to mind? I mean, what what do you have in mind to help them?
As far as what my advice would be?
Well, no. So let's say a kid's watching this and he says, I want some advice from Tom Telesco. What does he do? He goes, is there some sort of organization you're affiliated
with? I said, snap my fingers, what would I do? So yeah, so I got nothing right now.
Got it. Okay.
Other than like at CDM, like any kids that are graduating, I would meet with them and try and, give them some advice as they go into college. There's a lot of things once you get into college, you can kind of go to try and create that avenue where you want to go in sports. Maybe someday I'll, maybe consult with, something like that.
Well, maybe we can come up with some kind of link for the kids to stay in touch with you in some way.
Through you guys, yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. It's how we do that. We should come up with something. Because that's pretty much been our focus on this show is how are we going to influence kids? How are we going to, provide them with an example of what we discussed in the first show, which was mindset.
Kind of find their passion.
Yeah. Yep. And so a guy like you, and that's why I say, so I have this routine that I do with my kids. I have to get up. Well, right now, so my youngest boy is in water polo, and so I have to get up at 5 and drive him. He's a young sophomore, so he doesn't have his license yet. But I only have him for like another month, and then I don't have him. So I use ChatGPT, and I'm getting kind of off topic, but there's a new function on YouTube that's pretty sweet where it gives you the transcript of the YouTube video. Well, so I've taken these transcripts from some of these self-help guys like Brian Tracy, Jim Rohn. Have you heard of these guys by chance?
Not.
Okay. So anyway, they're like the original Tony Robbins guys. And then I have ChatGPT summarize it, and I give it to my son, and then he gives it to the coach. And so I say,
that's cool.
The reason I know that my son's reading it is because he would never give it to the coach if he hadn't read it first. Well, anyway, this last one was about outworking people and just the quote that it had. I thought I had it here somewhere, but there's only two types of people, those who work like hell and those who make excuses. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And I'm guessing you've worked with both kinds of people.
Probably, yeah.
A guy like you, when you have an organization and all these responsibilities to an owner and a city, if you get a guy that makes excuses, he's gone that minute?
The first time, probably not. You would hope that you hired somebody when you actually brought them in that you kind of filtered enough through. So I probably wouldn't be in a position if someone made a mistake and make excuse the first time to let them go right away. But if there's a pattern, I was more on a pattern basis. If there's a pattern of behavior like that, it probably isn't going to last real long. It's plus, and I'm sure it's like all businesses, but certainly in football, we all rely on each other. And if we don't win, we don't work. If we don't win, we're out of work.
Mm.
So if you can't rely on the person next to you, the person above you, the person below you, then you're not going to get to your goal. So if there was a pattern of conduct like that, then it's probably not going to last real long.
And when you work in close quarters with somebody like that, it's not it doesn't take long to see a pattern, to actually see that happen more than once, 2, 3, 4 times, and they can address it. But
yep.
So what do you tell your kids about work? I mean, is that what that's the advice you give them, is find something you're interested in, find something you love, and then outwork everybody at it?
I like, for me, the NFL is so super competitive. So you got 32 teams. For me, I never felt like I was the most talented GM. So I figured I got to work. Like, I got to be prepared and I got to outwork people. And that's kind of the philosophy that I had. Like, no matter what situation would come up, I want to make sure we're prepared for it. Doesn't mean you're going to make the right decision all the time. That's never going to happen. But I want to make sure we're prepared and we work. So a lot of it's just outworking people. Like, part of, I played Division III football. So you're not there on scholarship. You're there because you love to play and you're there to work. So that was, that's kind of the way I was brought up. It's kind of like, I'm from Buffalo, New York. That's kind of the mentality when you grow up in the Northeast. You grew up in Buffalo, like, you work. You outwork people.
Huh.
As far as advice I give my kids, you probably do a lot better job like advising your kids than I do. I'm probably more like, this is just how I've done it, and hopefully they see it and realize there's different ways that can work, and hard work's one of them. I can see you kind of sitting your kids down with some materials and self-help and kind of teaching it to them. I never had a chance to do that. Probably not very good at that part of it.
Well, it's so funny you say that because I'm trying to get through to my kids. I'm trying to get through to anybody, okay? But I've discovered my kids watch these shows. So, I mean, I know it sounds goofy, but this is one way I can communicate with my kids.
Yeah, by example.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I like doing it. So, okay. So, you know, there's all these names. I do a deep search on ChatGPT on all the guests and I look for dirt, right? And there's no dirt on you. How is that? How do you have such a high profile life and not have any dirt?
Because when you have a job that's higher profile, you can't. I mean, you just can't. I mean, it's part of the job. I mean, it's not like, you have a lower profile than the head coach, obviously, but you're still, you know, you're kind of out there. And that's part of the job. You know, all the decisions you make, everybody sees them. You know, they see all your mistakes. I mean, I'm sure you can find plenty of mistakes, you know, whether it was, you know, hiring, signings, whatever it is. As far as dirt, like, yeah, you gotta be live a clean life. That's part of the job. And if you're going to lead a group of people, you know, you have to live like that.
And so that's another topic I wanted to get into and, like, hopefully get deep into is the idea of leadership. And at some point you must have realized you had leadership qualities that maybe you didn't know about. Was there a breakthrough moment for you that you recall when you were young that you knew you had the ability to do this job?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, when I was young, I never thought about working in the NFL. Didn't even think it was a possibility. As far as the leadership stuff, when you're in high school and even in college, like I really wasn't thinking about myself a whole lot. Like, hey, what skills do I have? You know, I was captain of my high school team, captain of the college team. So I must have had some leadership skills, but I was never a big talker, not a rah-rah person, just kind of lead by example type. But when I was in college, I never thought about working in the NFL. I didn't even think it was a possibility.
But somehow, by chance, you had all these NFL people that you went to high school with and you were surrounded by?
Yeah, so the GM of the Buffalo Bills, his sons went to my high school.
Polian?
Yeah, Bill Polian.
Okay.
Right, so I grew up in Buffalo. Originally, when he came to the Bills, he was a lower-level staffer. Then he became GM, I think my senior year in high school. And then I ended up playing football at college where one of his sons went to play. So I knew some people there. And then when I'm in college, I get a call from, not from Bill Poyne, but probably his secretary or assistant at the time, say, hey, we need some college football players to intern in training camp. You know, work for like 6 to 8 weeks. You get paid basically nothing, but you can intern in training camp. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. Like, I was, you know, from Buffalo. Like, I was a Bills fan. I thought it sounded fun. And I thought I could learn some things to be a better player in college. Never thought of the internship as something that could lead to working in the NFL. Maybe I was naive. I just never thought of it. So I did that for 3 summers. Then I graduated from college. Again, I'm not even thinking of working that. I didn't even think jobs existed, you know, in the NFL for where I would do other than coaching. I interviewed for some different jobs outside of football when I graduated from college. My school was in Cleveland, Ohio. And then I get another call from somebody connected to Bill, and Bill had taken the GM job at the Carolina Panthers, and they're an expansion team. And I get a call saying, hey, look, he had to hire a whole staff, a whole football staff from scratch.
Huh.
So I get a call like, hey, do you want to come down and work for the summer in training camp? And I'm like, yeah, that sounds fun. Like, I hadn't taken a job, like a regular job. You're like, I'll do that. So I drive down to Charlotte.
Sorry, you had just gotten your BA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in business management. Again, no goals of working in football. I never thought of being a GM. I drive down to Charlotte, and it's an expansion team. So there's all these different jobs that come up that no one really knew what was going on yet. So I just did whatever they asked, you know, whether it was driving players to the airport, driving them to get x-rays or MRIs, rolling the tarp onto the field. This is 1995, so just the start of the internet. There was a lot of data entry. I did a lot of typing of, like, rosters, like, you know, like, jersey number, last name, first name, height, weight, college, years of experience, like a lot of typing. And I remember like we had like one IT person. And so I used to call these colleges and they would fax me their roster And then I would type it in our database. And he said, hey, I can pull up a roster on the internet. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, this is going to make my job a heck of a lot easier.
Right.
So it's just a lot of job like that, like cutting up a lot of video. Like, video is now digitized. Before, it was actually on tape.
Yeah. Right.
And we make cut-ups of players and cut-ups of plays. Everything had to be manually done. So a lot of data entry, a lot of typing. And then, so I'm doing all these jobs, and all of a sudden, it was supposed to be for the summer. And then the summer ends. And I'm like, I kind of like working in the NFL. Like, this is kind of fun, being on a team and working in football. No one told me to go home. So I just kept coming to work every day like I was a full-time employee, even though I wasn't.
Were you getting any money at
all? So I was getting paid by the hour.
Oh, okay.
And they had said, hey, put down every hour you're working, because they were going to get audited probably their first year as an NFL team. So I'm putting it down every hour, and I'm working like, we get in at 6 a.m., leave at like 11 p.m., seven days a week.
So you had that mindset then. You were all over
it. I guess that's
it.
Just – I didn't know how the NFL worked, but when I got there, I realized like how much everybody was actually working. So it wasn't like, you know, I'm just going to leave work and go home. Like, everybody else is still working. So I was keep that. That was the mentality. It still kind of is, but that was the mentality. Everybody just worked constantly. So that's all I knew. So I just got in.
So
that
was
schedule.
The culture of that organization. And,
that was, luckily that culture changed when I was with the Colts with Tony Dungy. He was more of a family atmosphere. Not that it wasn't family atmosphere with the Panthers, but it was. The hours were hard, but I mean, I was single. I just moved down there. It didn't matter to me. I was working on football, so I loved it. Yeah.
Okay, so then you go to the Panthers. Who is the GM there?
Well, so Bill Plone was the GM of the Panthers.
Oh, okay. I didn't end the Panthers. You end up with the Colts.
Yeah.
Okay, so
actually, I mean, it's a long story. I won't get into it, but so Bill was actually traded. The GM was traded from the Panthers to the Colts.
Okay, that's where I was going.
So he went to the Colts, and then how the NFL works. A new GM came in, and I was probably going to leave anyways and go with him to the Colts. But so I get fired from the Panthers by the new person that came in, even though I was going to leave anyways. But and then I went to the Colts with Bill, and I was there for 15 years with him.
How many times have you been fired?
Jeez. One, two, three.
Three.
Not
only
bad. 30 years. 30 years. That's not bad.
But pretty good.
Again, that's
good run.
That's kind of life in professional sports. You know, I had 11 years with the Chargers. That's a long run as a GM. So yeah. I've been pretty lucky. Raiders a little bit shorter, but hey, it's part of the business.
Right? Well, I wasn't a fanatical NFL fan, but I realized that pretty much everybody in San Diego is. So how did it get to where they didn't vote for a $3 increase in hotel rooms? And it's not like you go stay at hotels. If you live in San Diego, you're not going to go stay at a hotel in San Diego, are you?
Yeah,
I
think a part of it was just like, you know, public money going to a private, you know, organization.
But that's what did it, right? Was just that particular thing, and it had to
probably,
do with three bucks?
I forgot how much it was. It wasn't much. It was a hotel tax, maybe rental car tax. I don't remember. And then trying to find the right spot to put the stadium. There was a lot that went into it. But, yeah, the vote didn't go through. That's kind of typical for California. You know, there just isn't a lot of private money that goes into – or public money that goes into stadiums. You know, it's just it's different areas. Like when I was in Indianapolis, we had the RCA Dome, and then they built Lucas Oil Stadium. Lucas Oil Stadium, a lot of that was public money.
So that's what you were after.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, certain, like in LA, in New York, you know, you can put private money into it and you'll make enough revenue back to handle it. But in a lot of other cities, smaller cities, you can't. But then even in California, it's just hard to get public money for professional sports teams. And that's part of the whole thing with the Chargers. You know, I was more responsible for, the team on the field, not so much the stadium and what's going to happen. But, you know, we were part of that for a couple of years and all the ins and outs of the politics that go into it. And
but I'm guessing you probably got some death threats and that kind of stuff.
Not with that stuff.
Oh, really?
My stuff would be more like, hey, you didn't win.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I had, I mean,
so moving the team wasn't as bad as having a losing season.
Well, I mean, it wasn't great. I mean, we were in San Diego, I think, for 3 years. We loved it there. People were great.
You mean you and Lara?
Yeah.
Got it.
But moving a team is hard. You know, you got fans that have been invested in that team for, you know, their whole lives. It's when I was a young kid growing up in Buffalo, we had an NBA team. Buffalo Braves, and they moved to San Diego. And my dad was a huge basketball fan, and so that was hard. I remember when that team moved, and that was before you could really follow a team on, you know, on the internet. I know, because like you guys are West Coast guys, I assume. You know, East Coast, like back then, when a game was played on the West Coast, we wouldn't get the score for 2 days in the newspaper. Like the box score would always be late. They couldn't make the early paper on the East Coast. So like if you wanted to follow the Buffalo Braves when they went to San Diego, like you're like a day behind on the scores. Unless you call one of those phone lines like the Gamblers used to do and get the scores. But yeah, there's just a lot of emotions that go into when you're a fan of a team and it moves. I get that.
Of course, I asked this with zero actual credible knowledge of anything, so bear with me. But so Tom Telesco had nothing to do with that decision?
That's correct.
Really?
What, when you mean the team moving?
Yeah.
Yeah, team, that's, you know, you got the owners of all these NFL teams. They're the ones that kind of decide. And then in the end, like...
But you were blamed for it, or were you?
I mean, I don't even know, but...
Oh, okay. See, that's what I said. Really I wonder what the media in San Diego and how they felt about you at...
Probably not. I mean, it usually gets focused on ownership. And, like, you know, the stadium we're playing in, it was not NFL quality anymore, and it was basically falling down. So there had to be a new stadium solution some way, somehow. And it just couldn't get done, and the one in L.A. got done, and... Like I said, this isn't the first time it's happened to different cities, but it happened.
Well, I remember when you guys first moved, SoFi hadn't been built yet, had it?
No, so we played in Dignity Health, whatever it was called then. It was StubHub, I think, StubHub Center.
Oh, where the Galaxy played?
Yes, yeah, so we played there for three seasons while they were building SoFi. That was rough, actually. Yeah. That was hard. First year was kind of neat. Second year, okay. Third year was like, this is
over
enough.
It.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Apparently the Olympics are going to host all the swimming events at SoFi. Did you hear that?
No, but yeah, I saw at so Lucas Oil in Indianapolis, they put a pool in the stadium. So,
apparently all the swim events will be at SoFi and all the water polo will be somewhere else. Okay. I'm not sure, but that'll be pretty cool. You don't know any people at SoFi. You can get us in the owner's booth there for swimming, can you?
Yeah, I think I'm out of that now.
Do you know anybody, Tom? I haven't even gotten past my first page.
Before we move on to, I just wanted to kind of just touch on something real quick here. You know, just going back to, you guys said you want to help the kids. You want to help the youth. I think it's worth mentioning, especially to the youth, that one of the things I heard from you, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but one of the things I heard from you is... that one of the most important things that you utilized to get to your position was networking. Yes, you have to be able to swim. When you get there, when you get in the position, you have to be able to swim. However, that's not necessarily like what you went to school for. You knew somebody who called you and said, hey, we got a position open here. You know, you want to come in and work in the NFL. You know, and... I think that's something that I think a lot of people, especially younger, the youth, overlooks. They think, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to get a degree in a field of study, and I'm going to go get a job in that field, when that just normally isn't the case. Networking is so, so important here, and I think that like I said, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels to me like you said that networking led you into the field you're in and allowed you to kind of push your way up to, you know, not necessarily rise in ranks, but like become someone who works in the NFL in general. You know what I mean?
I think that's it'd be a different definition of networking. It wouldn't be one of those networking where you're shaking hands and meeting people.
Exactly.
So it's the networking of, and I always say this in sports, people always recognize hard work in sports, because it's kind of like if you're looking for players, part of the things you're looking for is guys that work really hard. So even if it's different parts of the organization, you recognize hard work. So if you put your head down, do what you're supposed to, listen, big ears, small mouths, you know, low ego, and work really hard, people are going to notice that. And you may get a, hey, you know, remember so-and-so, you know, good hard worker, you know, bright kid, like, let's give him a chance.
Of course.
And then you get into that field, and I think the big thing that I try and give perspective to younger kids coming up is the journey is long. Like, it doesn't happen overnight.
Yes, exactly.
It takes a long time. When I was on the path coming up, didn't even think about being a GM when I was like a lower level staffer. I was just worried about doing my job the best I could, because if I didn't, they're going to go get somebody else and replace me. So I was just really focused on whatever job I had. I was so focused on that role. I was never focused on, all right, if I do this role really well, I wonder where I'll get promoted to.
Of course.
Because you kind of lose your focus. And like I said, professional sports is brutal. Like, you don't produce, you're out. So,
absolutely.
And I think, and it could take years. Like, there was there's a couple departments. One is in scouting. There's a runway. We have these, we call scouting assistants. They come in, they're kind of like graduate assistants. They come in, low-level staffers. And then you have area scouts as the next move up. If one of those scouts doesn't leave or move on or get let go, these other young guys can't move up. So sometimes they get stuck for 3 or 4 years,
right.
5 years, you're making no money, you're working really hard. Like, hey, am I ever going to move up? And sometimes it happens quickly. Sometimes it takes a long time.
Interesting.
And you just got to, if you really love it, that's why, like, you got to have a passion to be what you're doing. Because if you're not moving up quickly and you're not enjoying what you're doing, you're probably not working real well either.
Huh.
So for me, it was, it was kind of a long run. But again, I was never focused on the end game. I just kind of, when I was on the Colts, we were really good. We won a lot of games. We went to 2 Super Bowls. We won a Super Bowl. And usually people on winning teams, you get those opportunities. That's why I got GM interviews, because the GM I worked for is in the Hall of Fame. And, we won a lot of games.
Yeah.
But it takes a long time to get there.
Yes. Performance. So it sounds like there's a lot of different aspects. Obviously, performance.
Yep.
Dedication and commitment.
Yes, yep. Good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And then... there's the who aspect, Yeah. Because that actually, plays into things.
I always say, if I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and I didn't grow up 10 minutes from the Buffalo Bills stadium, I'd never be in the NFL. There's no way.
Yeah, the opportunities would be slightly,
I got lucky.
Might be slightly different.
Right time. I also got lucky, right time, right place, that the team I went to right after college was an expansion team.
Right.
If they were an established team, I would have never found a spot there,
right.
More than likely. I'd have worked there for the summer. I'd have gone back to Cleveland. I'd be selling copiers and then, probably coaching high school football. And I'd probably be very happy doing it. I wouldn't be on this podcast living in California, but I'd be happy doing that. But
sure.
I got a lot of it's just luck.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so I've been meaning to ask you, do you think of yourself as a coach? And do you think of yourself? I'm guessing you do. And then,
no, I don't.
Well, yeah. Okay, so let me ask you a different way. Could you coach? You could, I'm guessing.
I could.
You could go coach a high school team. And be a successful, good coach.
I don't think so. I think it would take me some time. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Other than working some football camps a long time ago, I've never coached.
Oh.
I've always been in like administration, scouting, but as far as like, on the field, yeah, I can run drills. Can I call plays like Kevin Hettig right now? No way.
Really?
No way.
Oh, interesting.
I've never done it. I've never been in a game situation where the game flow and what to call and what to do, like. I'm always the guy upstairs that are like with our staff, like, God, I wish we'd have done this, wish we'd have done that. But I've never been in those shoes before.
Huh, interesting.
It's just,
I wouldn't have guessed that.
It's a different dynamic.
Yeah.
When you're a general manager. And like, I was in scouting for a long time and, salary cap and contracts. But as far as like on the field coaching, I haven't done a lot of that. Yeah.
Okay. So then I'm guessing then you don't have much to say about headaches, policies, or decisions. I mean, there's.
Well, I shouldn't.
I was trying to think of a better way to say that, but you know what I mean.
Part of what I'm doing there right now, I'm just like a resource, for players, coaches, like because I'm like I said, I've been in football my whole life, so I've seen a lot, been around.
So there's
a lot.
Nobody there that won't want to talk to you.
My skill set is small, as where it's really just it's football and sports. But I've been around a lot, seen a lot. I've had all sorts. I've probably gone through everything you go through, and like with a sports team, and that includes like the X's and O's of football. But again, like I haven't done a lot of coaching. I don't think they're gonna be coming to me and asking, "Hey, I'm 3rd and 3. What do you want to do here?" That's not gonna be my role, and it shouldn't be.
Okay.
But there's other things I can do to help out.
Right. So yeah. Okay. So then, when you're sitting in the owner's booth watching a big playoff game or a game.
Yep.
You really don't have opinions of the plays?
Oh, no,
plays?
I got opinions. Oh, no, you do, but like I always try to have perspective on that because the coaches, they're, 6 days a week, they are either at practice or in a film room putting together a game plan 24/7 trying to figure out how to attack the other team. Okay, I'm not in those meetings.
Got it.
So it's hard on game day to sit up there and, criticize what we're doing unless I want to sit in those meetings all week and be a part of the coaching staff. So you hire the right people. More times than not, they're going to do what you like. But, you know, again, it's football. There's another team that's getting paid on the other side. They're trying to stop you. So not every play is going to work.
Right, right.
You know, so, but I used to try and preach just like some perspective on what we do. And like, you know, people make mistakes, sure. But yeah, that's the whole play calling thing always bothered me when people complain about play calling. Because it's like, unless you're in those meetings, in the game planning part of that, you know, like, it's just hard to criticize.
You mean
that.
People like administrators or
anybody,
people like the fans?
Okay.
Just play calling
my
in
family,
general.
Yeah. Whoever. You know, other staffers, you know, stuff like that. So.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So, well, that I had a whole bunch of questions for you if you did identify as a coach. I do identify as a coach, and so that getting into one of the themes we've had with our previous guests, I've always brought up how the CDM water polo team can beat Newport Harbor. Now, let me just set the stage real quick. Is CDM's got a solid starting group, but we don't have depth. Newport Harbor has the top four players in high school on their starting – their six – kids that start, just so you know, in water polo. Yeah. So anyway, just not knowing anything about, or maybe you do know something about water polo, but I was going to guess you didn't.
Sorry.
As just a guy, just come up with something for the CDM water polo team. They are such underdogs, and there's got to be a way that we can beat Newport Harbor. Is anything come to mind just in general?
Yeah. Just
you're totally
the
down.
Mentality. Just, that mindset and mentality of being the underdog. There's nothing better than being an underdog.
Okay.
Don't you think?
I agree. So
I mean, usually, because if you're the underdog, all the pressure is on the team that has the quote-unquote more talent. But, you know, I don't know a lot about how water polo works, the game, how it goes back and forth. But there's got to be some point of like, preparation, scouting preparation, work ethic, and just, you know, grit.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know.
Okay, so think of it as a basketball team, and we can just use basketball for water polo. The coach asks you to come in and give a speech to the team. What comes to mind? You're not in the basketball world, obviously. You're you. What would you tell that basketball team, considering they're, you know, looking to beat the champs?
Probably that there's so much that goes into winning that doesn't take any talent. And a lot of that, like what we just talked about, preparation, work ethic. We talk about football a lot of times, alignment, assignment, and technique. And like, no matter whatever your skill level is, you can line up in the right spot. You can know your assignment of what you have to do on a particular play. And then you can use the right technique in that play. Now, it doesn't mean
you called it alignment,
assignment, technique. So alignment is just basically, you know, where do I line up? If I'm a receiver and this play is call a certain way, and I'm supposed to be 2 yards inside the numbers, not a yard and a half, not two and a half. You're there for a specific reason because the coach, you know, football is a lot of game of angles. Coach wants you in a certain spot. So anybody can do that, right? And then your assignment, basically the playbook. What do I have here? I'm the receiver. I'm supposed to run a curl. But if it's certain coverage, I got to convert it. All right? So just know what to do. That's the biggest thing with coaching is players knowing what to do. And then the technique of it, just whatever you were taught in practice. So you knew those three things. That takes no talent. Now, your one-on-one matchup, if you have the player you're going against isn't as talented as you are, if you have the right alignment, assignment, technique on every snap, you'll win every one-on-one matchup. You just will. Because usually the other guy on the other side of the ball, he won't be as disciplined as you are. You won't have that same alignment, assignment, technique. If the other guy on the side of the ball has the same amount of talent, at that point, you'll probably outwork them just based on those three things. Now, if this guy on the other side of the ball is maybe bigger, stronger, faster than you, he probably won't have that same discipline. So maybe you took where I may get beat a lot, how I kind of evened it out with my alignment, assignment, technique, and then after that, it's just like, who wants it more? So, like I said, in those three things, it takes zero talent to do. It doesn't matter. You could be small, slow, but if you can get in the right spot, know what to do, and do the right technique, you got a chance.
Man, that was good. So if we were to go backwards, what was the very last thing you said?
Alignment, assignment, technique?
Okay, but I want to ask you, where did that guy, who coined that?
Oh, gosh. I think that's an old, an old football. I think I got that from Bill Pullian, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
He coached for a long time before he became a GM, but yeah, it's an old football axiom.
Okay, I just remember the last thing you said was it come. Then it'll finally come down to who wants it.
Yeah,
more.
Like let's say you're an offensive tackle in football, and the defensive end on the other side of you is bigger than you, faster than you, stronger than you. But you play with really good technique. You know exactly what to do, and then you know sometimes you can level out that playing field because you're hoping, especially in high school, the kid across from you isn't as disciplined as you are.
Right.
All right, and then. Then it's just like, who wants it more?
Okay, so you that's know? What so I wanted to ask you. Who wants it more? That's
kind of a grit aspect to it. Like, I got to figure this out, you know? So
that's great. Alignment, assignment, technique, who wants it more?
Yeah.
From Tom Telesco. That's pretty good. Okay, so, well, I asked you about the coaching, and then I wanted to – I had just some just random questions for you because we were texting and you were telling, I was saying, you said you haven't done much outside the NFL. And for the last 13 years, you've basically been working 24/7. So you came from Buffalo, you landed in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Have you ever ridden a surfboard?
No. No.
Would you like to?
I thought about it.
You you're going to have to, Tom. Sorry. If you're going to live around here,
when you're 52 and had back surgery last year, I'm like, is it the best thing to do?
Oh, you had it last year?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
But I've thought a couple of people try to get me out on a surfboard. It looks hard. I've paddleboarded. Does that count?
Oh, yeah. Like, as long as you get out in the ocean. That's what I say. If you're if you live in Newport, you got to be out on the water.
But have I ever been on a wave? No, I never have. I mean, no. I guess part never had a chance, part like I don't know what's going to happen with this. So, okay,
did you have anything other than football with as hobbies? I mean, did you golf or play tennis?
I just started. I always said like when I'm not working as much, I want to golf.
Okay.
So I've been working on that. I've had plenty of time to do that, kind of learn the game of golf. But
my
hobby is mostly when I was working, you know, because the kids were either in grade school or high school, was just going to their events.
Yeah.
You know, especially like high school football games and that sort of thing. So that was my hobby. Like Friday nights, that was great for me just to kind of get away from work for a little bit and, you know, watch our kids play football.
Well, I thought it was remarkable that you were at all the games. I mean to considering that your job and to see you in the stands, that was impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably hard for you.
It helps when your kids play a game that you love. So that helps. But I realized my daughter played tennis at Mater Dei, and, you know, I didn't realize till her senior year towards the end that I hadn't been to one tennis match. And that bothered me a lot. And I went to her last one, and I'm like, you know, I can't let this happen. Like, you know, because the kids are only, you know, you're only high school for 4 years, and they're out and gone. So, now again, it helped that, you know, my boys played football. But, like, you know, even their basketball games, you try and be there.
We have cell phones,
so if somebody needs you, they can call you. But, you know, the job does kind of, you know, it takes over your life at times. And there's travel involved, obviously. But, for me, like, the, you know, some of the best memories are just watching high school football on Friday nights.
Yeah, so for sure.
So really, golf recently is like the first thing that you've done for yourself in quite a while then. Like for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And pretty much.
Interesting. Wow.
Let's get you
surfing.
There's just not
a ton of time when you're working. So,
I understand.
You know, because you're working weekends.
I understand.
And there's always stuff going on. And, you know, I guess I never had a ton of hobbies other than like kind of working out, going for a run, stuff like that. So
sometimes you
got
some
time.
Sometimes you have to make that
prioritize
time.
Prioritize it.
You have to, dude, because you can't. You have a family. You're the GM of an NFL team. That's not a demandless job, you know. So and you have to pour out from your cup, man. And if you have an empty cup, you can't pour. You know, you got to fill yourself up, brother. Yep. You got to give yourself some energy pluses. Whether that's, I think that spending time with the family and watching them, those are big energy pluses. But for you, dude, I mean, you know, I think finding some things for yourself, and then that goes for the kids too. You guys talk about, you know, it's like, but we have to cut that time out for ourselves.
We want well-rounded lives.
Yeah, we need to do that. Yeah, yeah. I know sometimes it doesn't, it's not easy, especially when you're, you know, sometimes there's seasons in life where we have to have our head down and be working for a year, 18 months, 2 years, hard, where we can't really go on a vacation or do something like that. So there's a time, you know, but
Okay, so I want to get back to the helping the kids. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I can relate to as a kid is just getting frustrated. Let's say you're with a job. Yeah. So I was telling you about what my early career and how I could just say, you know, I would suggest to somebody to not do what I did. I don't need to get into that. Okay, but my question for you is, you've had to have some major setbacks in certain ways. I don't know, just forget about the personal, any personal yep. setbacks yep. Business setbacks. And I would also imagine you've got to deal with some pretty serious anxiety. Do you get anxiety, and how do you deal with it? Now that's another thing. I almost want to try to maximize our time now and say, okay, now give us another speech, Tom. If you're giving a speech to a group of kids that have problems with anxiety, let's say, or self-doubt,
right,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I used to try and compartmentalize a lot of my job and just try and split it from, you know, work and home. When I'm home, I'm home. I try not to work from home. I'd rather just stay at work later and do work there and not bring stuff home.
Oh.
I mean, with my job, yeah, there's always anxiety because you're responsible for a lot of people. Number one, like, you know, it's a big staff. You got, like, at this time of year, you've got 90 players, 20 plus coaches, and you've got a huge support staff of like 150 people. And then you've got on top of you, like, you got this, you know, fan base that desperately wants to win. So yeah, there's always anxieties with that. But I know for me, the older I got, and the more experience you have, it's easier to compartmentalize and not listen to the noise and not listen to social media. Because that, I think the younger you are, that could really affect you, especially, you know, in a job that everybody sees what you're doing. But yeah, anxiety is real. And it's trying to figure out, I think everybody handles it differently, though. Some people handle it just by getting out and doing something different. Get out on a paddleboard, you know, clear your mind a little bit. I'm really big on exercising, working out, whether it's running, playing a sport, lifting weights, something. I think that's important, and being around people you enjoy being around. So
I love that.
Yeah.
So okay, you go to bed at night and you have all these things going on in your head. I mean, there's got to be a lot going on in your head. And how could you get your what was your self-talk like? What were you saying to yourself with all this activity in your mind, and you're trying to get to sleep?
Yeah, it's. And my mind was always trying to like prepare for the next thing and how am I going to do it? But it's hard to turn off. It was just hard to unplug. It's just always, I'd be out with at a dinner with people and you're talking with them, but in my mind, I'm still thinking about something at work and you just can't stop it. I mean, maybe you guys have had the same thing. You have something, you just can't stop it. And you just deal with it. I don't know. I just dealt with it. I don't even know how.
Yeah. You have to continue moving forward. You have that thing. You can never turn it off, especially when your responsibilities are so high, when the demand from you is so high. And you have kids, you have family, you have all these different things. So you're never really stopping that kind of process. But you got to live through it.
Yeah, I think the big thing is
you tune the noise down a little, you know? I have to remind myself,
it's just football. I mean, it's our livelihood, but it's not like, you know, I'm not a doctor, you know, I'm not, you know, no one's dying.
If you mess up, you're not going to kill somebody.
Nothing's going to happen. You know, it's just, you know, it's entertainment, you know, it's a performance business, but in the end, it's not life or death. Now, it's easy to say that, and then you go back to the same thing. It's like, oh, we got to win this game. It's life or death.
Yeah, 50,000 people in the stands, you know.
It's not, so.
Yeah.
So you would tell, that would be a technique you could
use. With me, yeah.
Okay.
Like, it's just football.
Okay.
You know, it's just what I do for a living, and that's the one thing I used to tell a lot of people coming up, because like I said, the job, it requires a lot of time, effort, and focus, but the job doesn't define who we are. Like I'm a dad and a husband and have, you know, a life outside of football. Sometimes you lose track of that, but you know, wins and losses isn't gonna define who I am. Like, you know, for all of us, players included and coaches, things happen in games you can't control. If you lose a game, it doesn't mean you're any worse person. So now you got to remind yourself of that this game, this job isn't going to define who I am as a person. Like I said, easier said than done.
Yeah.
But that's something we used to try and preach of, you know, for everybody in the organization. Like, look, we're here to win. Like, we know that. We know there's pressures with it. But, look, it doesn't define who we are.
That's great. That's very well stated, because I know a lot of people carry those wins and losses with them emotionally, you know, for years. You know, so that's really well stated. And I think that's something that people – I think it's a practiced art to let that go, to understand that doesn't affect who I am as a person because I may have made a bad play or maybe made a bad decision or something happened on the field that I had no control over, but we ended up losing the game.
Look at Sean McVay. He's been wildly successful. He had one bad year, and he was having self-doubt, you know, and he's kind of pulled through that. And he's one of the, if not the best coach in the league, one of the best coaches in the league.
Awesome.
Him and Andy Reid. And even him, you know, you have one bad year, and you're thinking, and you can't, you know, he had a hard time kind of coming to grips with that. And now he's, you know, kind of come through that.
Which That's awesome. Job or which department in a team would be the department that gives the kids, I call them kids, the men, their lesson on staying out of trouble?
Which department?
What I mean? So we have he's called the director of player engagement.
Okay.
And he handles a lot of things with our players, everything off the field. And a lot of it's education-based, especially kids coming out of college. Like, hey, once you become a professional athlete, and kind of helping them with everything, because we have players that come from all different parts of the country, even parts of the world, but mostly parts of the U.S., different demographics, raised differently. And then you come into the NFL, and it's a professional job. It's no longer college, not on scholarship.
You've got to show up on
you gotta
time.
Show, yeah, it's like there's a lot of responsibilities. There's a lot of responsibilities off the field that we try and lessen the amount of distractions they have. Because, like, say you're a young kid and you've got a $10 million signing bonus. You know, how are you going to handle that money? Now, they all have financial advisors, they have agents, but we're trying to have some education, too, on just living as an adult, because we want to make sure they can focus on being a great player, which takes a lot of focus. But we have a department that kind of really handles a lot of that, of education with the younger players, and even, you know, even for the guys that are veterans, too. It's, you know, resource for them as well.
I would imagine the college teams have that department also.
Yeah, I think I'm not as familiar with that, but I'm sure they do, because the jump from high school to college is big, and then the jump from college to pro is big. It's even bigger, even if you come from a bigger school. It's a large jump when all of a sudden you're doing it for a living, and you're also doing it where, you know, say you make the team, you're as a rookie, and every year you got more competition, actually every day. You know, if you look at the transaction wire in the NFL, every day there's players being released and signed. You never know how long you're going to be there. So not every player is Justin Herbert. You know, there's 53 players on the active roster, and probably 25 of those, it could be any day where somebody else is coming in replacing you. So you got to handle that.
Yeah. That's pressure, man.
You know, that's why they get paid the big bucks.
That's right.
When you're putting a team together, is the coach more important, or is the quarterback the most important? Does it start with the quarterback, and then, or who's first, and how does that go?
The two most important people in the organization are the head coach and quarterback. So it kind of goes hand in hand. Those are the two biggest decisions you'll make as the head coach and quarterback, and then you build around that. So it'd be easy to say the quarterbacks are harder to find, but in the end, you got to have both. Hmm. They're both hard to find. Find the right ones, and ones that fit together too. That's a big part, is the fit.
Why wouldn't Hedig try to get a job in college or do something in the NFL?
You'll have to have him on the podcast.
I know.
Ask him those questions.
I'm going to. But a guy like you recognize coach, how talented he is.
Really,
right?
He's really good. He could coach. Yeah. He could coach in college. He could coach in the NFL if you wanted to. But, you know, maybe you should bring him in here. He probably loves working with kids.
Such a cool guy too.
He probably loves working with kids. There's a different dynamic when you're coaching high school kids. Because, again, most of these kids are not like your son Russell. They're going to go play at UCLA. Most of the kids are playing high school football for 4 years, and then they'll move on to something else, not in football, in college. But you learn so much. Like, football is such a great game as far as what you learn as a high school player. You know, the accountability, the discipline, the time management of playing a sport and then having school, the mental, physical toughness, being on a team. And then those are all traits that when you go into college and not play a sport, you can use those and help you. And then when you go into the real world, they really help you.
Yeah.
Kind of lean back on what you learned as a high school football player. So you can just affect so many kids as a high school football coach. You're not going to affect the same amount in the NFL. NFL is really about X's and O's, you know, and short time spans if you don't win. High school is a little bit different. You know, you can stay in one place for a long time, affect a lot of kids. So
okay, so I'm a high school football player. The only real boss I have is my position coach and the head coach, right? Then I get to college. Now my boss is kind of the same thing. But then I get to the NFL, and now I have like 1,000 bosses.
Yeah, you have your position coach. Sometimes there's an assistant position coach, so that's okay. Two. You got a coordinator, that's three. You got a special teams coach, that's four. got a head coach that's five. Sometimes there's an assistant head coach that's six. You got a GM, seven. You got an owner, that's eight.
Jeez.
So, yeah, it kind of adds up after a while, which is why one of my philosophies with our players, I always worried about having too many voices in their ear, because mm-hmm. you got all those people. Plus, that you got, you know, agents and family and friends. So I kind of pick my spots, you know, rather than being in their ear all the time. And it really, if a guy was kind of, everything was going great and everything was smooth, I wouldn't even bother with them.
Huh.
I actually told one of our players that he'd been with us for like 5 or 6 years, excellent player, loved him. I didn't spend that much time with him because I didn't feel like I had to. Like, he didn't need me for anything, so I didn't want to bother him. I actually told him, I said, don't think I don't like you. I just don't think you need me for anything.
Oh, interesting.
Now, if you're in my office a lot, there's probably a reason for
right,
it.
Right, you know, right.
Some other guys that I had to spend a lot more time with. But, yeah, as a professional player, there's a lot of people to answer to, a lot of people to listen to. Everybody has their own agendas mm-hmm. and answers, and I would kind of – I didn't want to be the another one.
Yeah.
You know, and so you got to pick your spots.
That's cool. Yeah, I think that's respectable. You know what I mean? I think that you probably, in my opinion, as someone who's constantly, like, you know, doing work and, you know, in the field, so to speak, I think that's really respectable. I like that a lot. I like that vibe.
Well, think about it. If they're doing something really well, I don't want to screw it up. 100%. Leave them alone. Let them go.
The very first movie I ever acted in, I was on set for like 15 hours for the very first day, and like 10 hours in, I pulled the director aside and I'm like, you've been pulling this guy aside and giving him notes. You've been pulling her aside and giving, do you have any notes for me? And he pulls me aside and he's like, dude, he's like, you're giving me everything I want from you. He's like, if I pulled you aside, then that would be a problem. You know what
yep.
I mean? Like,
I'll let you know.
Just keep doing what you're doing. You know what I mean?
That's so, right.
You know, sometimes you just gotta ride that wave, you
yep.
know?
Yep.
I kind of try to do that in my day-to-day operation with my real job.
Sure.
Not have to call the boss.
You're right. Yeah.
If exactly. he calls me. He's like, why haven't you called me today?
Yeah, right.
Like, oh crap. Well, it's fun. So I actually have a real boss, and that's I was thinking like a boss, like mm-hmm. an old school dude that I don't see anybody but me being able to work for this guy.
Does he listen to podcasts?
No. Otherwise, yeah. I wouldn't be doing
yeah,
this.
Send this over to
but, you know, it's funny. The owner of our firm probably is watching this and isn't telling my boss because he knows my boss will rip my ass. it's funny how life works that way. But that's why I was going to ask you. Have you ever had to dress somebody down? Do you recall?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and it would it be a? I'm guessing would it be a player? Like, have you ever had to dress a player down?
Yeah.
Oh, know, really?
It's always in private.
Oh, okay.
Always, you know, praise in public, punish in private. You know, and, I think there was once there was one on field incident I had to do, but other than that, yeah, there's certain times, but
sorry, I wouldn't say it's always incident, like a game or a practice.
It was during practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just like some he did something.
Just wouldn't practice.
Oh, he was just being
yeah,
lazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it doesn't happen that often. You get the right people. Like, you're supposed to have a really, you know, firm filter when you're bringing players. And that doesn't mean you're not going to have issues here or there. But, yeah, there's been a couple times, but not that many.
But what would be a circumstance you would staff. Give somebody a hard time versus the coach giving them, you know, so it's...
I guess it's whoever we think will get through to that player.
Oh, I see. About okay, players, so you're yeah. all you're there, all
there,
the bosses.
Yeah, there were certain situations like, hey, I think you should handle this. Certain situations, hey, like, I'll handle this. There's certain situations like, hey, like, let me... This is going to take some time. Could be a distraction. I'll just handle it. You just worry about the team. You know, staff members every now and then, you got to, you know, prod them a little bit and get them... Because every now... Like, you might have somebody, like, you think is really talented. Like, I'm talking about staff member. Like, really talented. You think they're good. They just need some prodding, some push, some work sometimes to get, you know, where you need to go. So, the dressing down is... It's usually, if there's a pattern of behavior and it's not changing... A lot of times, you just make a move and just let somebody go rather than going the whole just dressing down. But
what's the separation between all those bosses? So you got owner, GM, coaches. Who doesn't overlap, and what overlaps and what doesn't overlap?
Not sure. I guess
does that make sense?
Yeah. No.
So I'm a player, and
first of all, the owner owns the team. But
he can do anything he wants.
Yeah, he can do anything he wants. But usually, you know, we're the ones that, you know, we do the work. Like, that's, you know, with your owner, like you don't want to, you don't complain to your owner, you complain to your boss. You give them, you know, they want solutions. You know, how are you going to fix things? That's the biggest thing. So, you know, usually, at least in football, like the position coaches, like they're responsible for their groups of players. But when it comes to like administrative things and contracts and discipline, and the head coach and the GM usually handle that.
But and you would, and so you and the owners are hand in glove, or yeah, does the owner give you the authority to just do it?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, really?
But you always keep them informed of what you're doing, the reason why. When I was with the Chargers, they were great. They hired me to do a job, and they let me do my job with support, fully knowing that, like, you know, there's a lot of decisions you make that they don't work. But, hey, look, this was the thought process that went into it. If you have a really strong process, you can kind of always rely on that. It just doesn't mean that the decision is always going to be right. But if you have a really solid process, at least you can, you know, you kind of lean back, and usually you'll be right more than you're wrong. That's what I always say. Like, we're always trying to increase our odds of being right on a player selection, trying to increase our odds of being successful. Doesn't mean you're going to be right all the time. But always keeping them informed of what you're doing. And but never forgetting that, you know, the owner who owns the team, like, it's their team. If they want to do certain something, then you do it.
Huh.
But, you know, usually it's a shared vision. Like, the owner hired the GM, hired the head coach for a reason because they have a shared vision. And then, you know, you go from there.
Huh. Have you heard of any other organizations that had young GMs like you? There's, you know, it's, I mean, I think you, what are you, 40 when you became a GM?
Yep.
And who are the other young guys like that, or that have been, that got these high profile jobs at a young age?
Yeah, it's happening like, more and more.
Oh, it's happening more and more now.
Yeah, certain. Like, you saw it in baseball a lot. Baseball has a lot of younger GMs. Yeah. Football, when I first started, most of the GMs were older, and it's kind of turned a little bit. It's funny. When I was – my whole career, I'd always been the youngest guy in the room all the time.
Huh.
And then there was a certain point when Brandon Staley was the head coach and his coaching staff was here. I remember sitting in a meeting with the coaching staff, and I looked around the room. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm the oldest guy in the room. Huh. I couldn't believe it. So it goes by fast.
Oh, yeah.
There's a probably a good handful. Like, you know, the Cleveland Browns have a GM that's really good. We actually hired him as a scouting assistant when I was with the Colts. He's a younger GM, but it's there's a good amount. So I'm an old guy now.
So that's what I say for the kids. They go to college. They graduate from college. They can copy your route and get an internship.
Best way to get in any professional sports team is internships. You get a chance to get in. You kind of see what everything is like. You might not even like the environment, like the job, but you get it. But the big thing is you get in and get a chance to work, and it's almost like a tryout.
Mm-hmm.
So they can see what you can do. Internships are hard to get, but that's the best way in. And the best time to do that is right when you graduate from college. You know, you're usually not married. You don't need a ton of money yet because internships don't pay a lot. You have a lot of extra hours on your time and on your, you know, to do work. So that's usually the best time. I always tell kids, if you want to work in sports, don't graduate from college, go work in investment banking for 5, 6, 7 years and decide, you know what, I want to try the sports thing. Like, by that time, it's going to be really hard.
Okay.
You know, to drop back down, not make very much money, all the time you got to put into it. So I was, you know, come out of college, give it a shot to see how far you can take it. Smart guys like yourselves, like, you can always go back to investment banking at some point.
Or podcasting.
Right? right? But internships are big. And because sports is a lot of, we're talking about like who you know. Like, if you get into a sports team and show you work really hard, there's like a loyalty factor in sports. And also, people leave teams all the time and go to different teams. So if you work really hard and people see that, when those people leave, they may say, you know what, remember so-and-so, let's bring him over. Let's interview him for this job or her for this job. And there's like a lot of loyalty involved. That was my career. I worked for Bill Polian as an intern with Buffalo, and I went with them to the Panthers and then the Colts.
Hmm.
And if I didn't, you know, if I wasn't contributing to winning, he would have never brought me along. But, you know, I was at least contributing, helping, working hard. And that's the same thing, you know, get an internship, show people what you can do. And hopefully they recognize that, and you go from there. You just got to be willing to – that's why you have to have a passion for it, because it's It's a lot of hours with low pay, and you're going to have other people that graduate from college, your other roommates are going to be working 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, making decent money, and you're not yet.
Mm-hmm.
If you stick it out, you might. But, you know, there's a long period there.
Hmm. Well, that's good. So, you know, and you get into all these decisions and the decisions you've had to make in your career are, like, life-changing, not just for that person, but for the future, his future generations, like,
right.
for the rest of his generations, right? Are they thankful to you when they get that money, or are they thankful to the owner, or who are they mostly thankful for or to?
It's funny, both, but they are thankful to the GMs, whoever drafts them first,
right?
It's kind of funny because and I love it. I mean, I got a text the other day from a player that was checking in to see how I was doing.
Okay,
and you know, we had signed him out of college. Didn't draft him, signed him out of college. It was his first team. He's with us for like 7-8 years. But yeah, I think they see, which it's always funny to me because like a lot of these players, they're gonna be drafted by somebody,
uh-huh.
you know, so they're gonna be in the NFL. They're gonna be an NFL player. You know, we just happen to be the ones that draft them, but they are, I get a lot of that, which is kind of cool.
So it's not so much writing the dollar amount. It's actually just bringing them
being
in.
Being the one that's that it. Makes that's the decision mostly
to pull them
in.
To give them the opportunity
okay.
to be an NFL player. And then hopefully in the right situation that where they can really be successful. That's the other thing.
One of my favorite movies, genre, like notwithstanding, is Draft Day with Kevin Costner. Uh-huh. And is that an accurate portrayal of how a GM's job is, or how much you're hated and how much you're loved, like the whole polarization?
When we leave this podcast, you can do your homework now. So when I was with the Chargers, have an unbelievable social media team,
okay.
like the best in the league, super creative. Just the content they have is great. So I forgot what year it was. We were in LA. They came to me and they said, hey, look, we want to do this thing where we put me in a room and we're going to show scenes of Draft Day. I'd never seen the movie. We're going to show you a scene of Draft Day and then we want you to comment on it. So so it's on YouTube. You can search it and find it. So it was like, I don't know, 30-minute thing. So they showed me like, I don't know, say 5 or 6 clips of Draft Day and I gave my thoughts on it. No, it wasn't that realistic.
No,
it really wasn't.
The answer is no.
Yeah, I mean,
have you seen the movie yet?
So I've seen all the
clips.
Yeah, so I saw the clips, and there were a couple of things I thought they did a decent job of, but a lot of it just wasn't. But it's a movie, too.
Of course, right?
Is it a good movie?
It's a great movie.
Oh, really? Okay,
it's a great movie.
Kevin
Costner plays the GM of, I believe it's the Browns.
Yeah, it was
and
the Browns,
it's
yeah.
like it's and it it's the whole movie takes place over one day of Draft Day and. He has to do some positioning and
you'll
moving
like,
around of
you'll
certain
like
things
video
and players.
Because they show me some things, and I was just like, you know, it's kind of wide-eyed. Like, you
know, I'll watch it today. I'm going to watch it when I get home.
Yeah.
I asked that, too, because you said that the players appreciate you guys, and the GMs, especially when you guys are the ones who bring them on. And that was a huge part of that movie was his relationships with the three players that he was considering drafting first.
His first pick. You're making a big investment in a person, especially, and that was a quarterback I think they were drafting too.
There was a couple. Callahan guy, and then there was the quarterback,
but that's
and then there was
the
a running back. And
the face of your franchise.
Yeah.
So, which is why we were so comfortable with Justin Herbert at we drafted him. But it's such a big decision. I mean, that could, you know, could go either way,
yes.
depending on who you take. So, and you would like some relationship between the GM, the head coach, and the quarterback, because that's where you're going.
Absolutely.
He's taking you to the promised land. So it's a lot of work that goes into that pick.
So at least that part of it is true, the relationships and the connections between the GM and the players that you guys believe in and draft.
You know, it's funny, when you draft players are, you know, 20, 21, 22, 23 years old, and if they're with you for 10 years, you really see them grow up in front of you. All of a sudden, you know, they're married, they have kids.
Yeah.
Which makes it hard on
it's a third of their lives.
Me. Yeah, you see them grow up in front of your eyes, which is hard. It's always hard on me. And then they're playing for you. They're on the field, giving up their blood, sweat, and tears.
Right.
But you also know at some point you're either gonna have to trade the player, cut the player. Very rarely do we get a guy that just retires on his own. It happens every now and then, but you form bonds with these guys.
Yeah.
I always have to be careful because you can't.
You are their boss. You know.
Yeah. But you, I mean, the guys that like work hard for you, it's hard not to have that close bond with those guys. But you also know it's a business, and you have to make tough decisions on when to move on from players, and the next player comes in. And I always tell the guys like, hey, look, they're going to move on from me from some point too. So it's not just like we're just releasing players all the time. Like at some point, the owner's going to come in, which has happened twice. Like, hey, look, we're going to move on from you, move on to somebody else. It's just part of the business of professional sports.
What player have you had, if this has ever happened to you, what player have you ever had to let go that really was hard to do?
Oh, man.
What was the hardest one that you had to like pull in your office and say that you were so connected with and you were like, dude, I'm sorry, but
there's a couple, and I'll probably miss some, but when we didn't bring back Melvin Gordon, that was hard. Like I loved Melvin Gordon. Great kid, super hard worker, really talented player. You know, but you're making decisions for the whole football team.
Yeah.
That was really hard. There's been a lot of them, which is good. I think that's a great good thing.
That's a huge deal. Your
scouting staff are bringing in the right players. It means your coaching staff is coaching those guys up into your culture. That you want it to be hard. I mean,
yeah, but you're connecting with them on a personal level. That's the beautiful part of it.
If you're releasing
a
player that's been just a pain in the ass, it's like those are easy. Like you just move them on out. But it's the ones that But so you want to have more tough decisions than easy ones.
Sure.
So it means you're doing things the right way. Yeah. You got to make really tough decisions, guys that you love. But you know, everybody has a shelf life, including coaches and GMs.
Yeah.
So I got to give a shout out to one of my Cal Bears. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Not yet.
Who would be a Cal Bear that worked for you that comes to mind?
Keenan Allen.
He was a Cal Bear. Okay. Well, I was thinking of Dave Benn.
Oh, he was before me.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
shoot.
I think he retired the year before I got to the Chargers.
Oh, shoot. Because I wanted to ask you about him because I didn't know him, but a bunch of my buddies know him, are friends with him. And they always said he had the best job in the world.
Well, he was also one of the best that ever did it, too.
Oh, really?
Which is why he did it for so long.
Yeah, okay.
He was really good at it. Yeah.
I can't remember who I was just talking to.
I'm sorry, he's a long snapper.
But he also dated Pamela Anderson.
Oh, nice.
So you knew that, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what I was going to say. Did he really date Pamela Anderson? Or is that
he did. I wasn't there at that time.
Right. That's it. So I was just talking to somebody about long snapping. It wasn't you, but whoever it was.
It's not an easy job.
But it's like a super important job.
Super important.
And you don't have to be the greatest athlete to do
it. One misfired snap and everybody notices. Nobody notices the snap on a PAT or field goal. They just think it's automatic, which usually is. But it's a hard job.
Yeah.
We have a hard time finding long snappers. That's why they play for so long, because we can't find them very much. In college.
Interesting.
College rules are different than the NFL as far as like punt snaps. The long snappers in college are much smaller because they have to run down and cover quicker than the NFL. The rules are you can't leave the line of scrimmage until the ball is kicked. So our snappers are bigger because they have to block more. So we have a hard time finding college long snappers that can come be professional long snappers.
You hear that? You hear that, players? You want the NFL?
I might switch wrestle to long snapping.
Big demand.
he's too small. But
okay.
They're so, and it's such a repeatable, that's why a lot of long snappers are good golfers, because they can repeat the same motion over and over.
Huh.
You know, kickers are usually good golfers. They can repeat that motion.
Yeah, muscle memory. That's
muscle memory,
interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, if you find a good long snapper, they're good as gold.
Huh? And
that's,
and they're
awesome.
Pretty well protected from injury, right?
Yeah, there's rules now that you can't just blow up long
snappers.
Smash their heads down.
Exactly.
You can't smash them, so they're protected a little more. But it's not an easy job.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna let you go, Tom. But I want to come up with like some sort of follow up for the kids, and so I'm just throwing shit against the wall.
Sure.
We'll come up with something.
Ryan always does this thing, and
I didn't do it this time.
There's a saying, you know, you've heard the saying, you know, teach a man to fish and give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach a man to fish and he'll eat for the rest of his life.
Yep.
Can you give us a fish?
Right.
Not teach us to fish, just give us a fish.
I
give us
you're
a little
talk
advice.
About if I can kick his ass.
No. Just give us a fish. Give us something that every college kid out there can apply to their lives, apply to their sports, apply to whatever they're doing.
Doesn't have to be an athlete either.
Whatever it is, academics, life. Just give your best life advice. Give us a fish.
Oh, man, it's tough. I'd probably say if you're a college student, probably volunteer in something that what your passion is, whatever that may be.
Love that.
So volunteer. Plus, you got time in college.
Put yourself around those environments.
Nobody's taking classes from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. in college. There's a lot of dead time, especially if you're not playing a sport. There's a
Nobody's taking classes from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.?
Nope. They may be
when
studying,
do they take classes?
Well, I'm saying not all day.
You're right. Yeah.
So you have like two or three classes.
How do you know about me? How do you know that?
Yeah, like two or three classes a day. You got some studying to do, but you got some free time. Go volunteer somewhere.
That's a
great idea.
If you want to work in football but maybe didn't play football, then go volunteer at the high school that's near your college, or volunteer at your college's athletic department. They'll take the work.
Wow.
You know, and that's actually a good way of networking too. Because you can, if you want to work in a sport, sometimes, I mean, it could help that you played the sport, but if you didn't, there's still other ways you can get in, and a lot of it's just by volunteering and learning it as you go.
Well, now they have sports management degrees. Did they have those?
When I was coming out of high school, probably not as many schools did. I didn't even think of it at the time, but there's a lot of schools that have that degree now.
Yeah. Yep. I think it's a master's level. There's a master's level.
Some schools have it as a bachelor's. Yeah. A lot have it as a master's
degree.
Interesting. There's some schools that are really known for it.
Yeah.
There's some big, like Michigan has a great program. Ohio University has a great program. There's like some different schools that have some really good sports management programs. And
wow.
The great thing about those programs, too, is the networking part of it. All the alumni that came through that school that went through that program, you kind of lean on people like that. So that's, if you do want to work in sports, I always say you don't have to have a sports management degree, but it could help you.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But get into it early because...
Get into it early. Don't wait. Yeah, get into it early.
Yeah. All right. Well, did we leave anything out? Let me see. So I got... mindset. Oh,
I see a lot of red ink on that.
Well, I know. I was just making notes. Okay. This is my top note. I was going to just fuck with you. But so when we first met, I don't know if you remember this. I can't remember where we were. We were at a football game of some kind. But anyway, you were with, what's his name? Colby. Mm-hmm. And Colby goes, "Hey, Weir, I've been watching you come from the parking lot, and you've been smiling the whole way over here. Do you remember that?
It was at a 7-on-7 tournament.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And then, so I said, I can't remember the book, but I said, well, I'm just reading this book, and it tells me to smile more, and you get more out of life, and people will, like, do stuff for you. And then I was telling you about how I was at the supermarket, and the people were like, hey,
Colby,
would you like to
totally recognize it like that, too. I just thought you were creepy.
No, okay, but then you told me that you started smiling more at work.
So there was a time early in my career, I had a boss that was, I learned a lot from, but he was tough, really hard, old school. So we're in these meetings, and he would be giving opinions on players, and he would just dress you down, like yelling, screaming, swearing at you. So after a while, what I did when he was yelling at me, I would just smile back at him. And he used to get them all like I'm trying to dress them down.
Right.
And just to kind of just show him that, hey, look, you can say whatever you want, but you're not going to get me.
Right.
Like, get into my soul.
Yeah, like, I'm listening. Like, I'll take the constructive criticism and I'll learn from it, but you're not going to get me. Like,
exactly.
It won't happen. So,
well, then he wasn't like my boss because my boss won't give up until I'm on my back.
Right. That's the kind of thing that will make people stop doing that. You know what
exactly.
I mean? Seriously, when they realize
they'll
that you're smiling through that, they're like, God, it's infuriating to them that they can't get through it. Yes.
Yep. I'll move on to somebody else.
Well, what I realized about bosses is they're always right.
That's why they're the boss.
Yes. And then I got this lesson early was the boss is always right even when he's not right. So for the kids, if you keep that in mind, because that's something that can get you derailed when you start to argue with your boss because you know you're right. You know,
there's a fine line. As a boss, you got to listen and learn part of it too. Doesn't mean you have to always take the opinion, but you got to listen. At least show that you're listening.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or else you're never getting any opinions back from anybody that's working with you because they're not going to bother giving you an opinion.
Exactly.
Well, it's okay. Then you mentioned the scouts that have a senior scout ahead of them, and these guys might linger if these guys don't move on.
Right.
If that is the case, is there any advice or a way to break through these guys or they're there
it's
and they're
hard.
Not going anywhere?
It's hard when you're scouting is such a narrow field. I mean, going to coaching somewhere else. But
yeah, you either go somewhere
it's
else
such
or
a narrow
wait.
Field. A lot, some other jobs, there's a little bit more different avenues to kind of work in. But scouting is difficult. Plus with scouts, a lot of times as they get older, like they just scout forever. And then jobs don't open up.
For sure. why would you want to stop? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and then did the Raiders got rid of the head coach and brought in Pete Carroll? Is that what just happened?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
And have you ever worked with Pete Carroll or do you know know him?
No, I know him a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so what would you say he's one of the great ones?
Yes.
Okay, so what makes him so great? And is there anybody who's the greatest? Who comes to mind when you say what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Like I always say like right now like in the league right now, like Andy Reid and John Harbaugh and Sean McVay, like those three guys come to mind first.
Okay.
But Pete Carroll, Pete Carroll was out for the last couple of years. So, but Pete has amazing culture, energy, and he can pull, like whatever your talents are you have, he can pull every ounce of that out of you and enjoy doing it.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's pretty special. They're like when he was at USC, special with Seattle. There aren't very many people like him.
So, but how does a guy like McVay, when he's in his early 30s, how does he have the same kind of impact as
just God-given? It's just like he's special.
But he can? I mean, he's that special, McVay is?
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah.
Really? He's just an inspirational dude?
Yeah.
Really?
Some people just have it.
Huh. I love that.
You know, it's hard to define sometimes, but like you have to connect with all different levels of people. And some guys just have it.
Huh. You know what? That's what makes a great movie director, too. That's the exact same thing that makes a great movie director, who can just see that talent in somebody and pull it out of them.
Yep. Yep.
Pull them aside and have some words with them, and that person just comes alive. You know what I mean? It's like...
You have to connect with different people, different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, that's a pretty interesting skill to have. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Wow.
Right on, Tom. Well, I think I told you I could kill an hour easily.
Yeah, it's over and over an hour.
It's got to be more than an hour.
Hour and a half?
No, because we didn't start.
It started about 10, 20.
Ah, see, I told 10, you.
24.
There you go.
That's been a great episode. I'd actually love to have you. I'd love to have you back. I'd love to have you back and talk to you just more about,
We'll be more prepared when you come back.
The mental,
notes there.
Yeah, the mental game.
I didn't get to any of my notes.
But yeah, man, that's wonderful. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah, anytime. Appreciate it. And then obviously the invitation's open to come use the
please.
Studio.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Yeah, it's a great setup here.
Yeah,
a lot of resources.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you guys so much for joining us today. Thanks to our guest, Tom Telesco. And thanks to our host, Mr. Ryan Weir. We'll see you guys next time. Take care.